I think one of the fundamental kind of approaches that vets need to take is to be really upfront and honest with each client as they come in the door. And if you're not the right vet for them, then so be it.
Welcome to the So You're a Vet Now What, the podcast. This is a show that serves as your audio mentor in your journey as a veterinarian. And each week, our awesome host, Dr. Mariah McCauley, will be bringing you insightful short-form interviews with happy, successful vets who are eager to share their career and clinical tips to make your life easier. So whether you're a final year vet student or a recent graduate, this podcast is your trusted companion on the pathway to success in veterinary medicine. Over to you, Mo.
Welcome back to So You're a Vet, Now What? I'm your host, Dr. Mariah McCauley. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Dr. Sean McCormick. Sean is a veterinarian with an intense passion for wildlife conservation, which led him to start up the Ealing Wildlife Conservation. Alongside his role, Sean is a strong advocate for speaking on brachycephalic health issues and recently went viral for his, quote, social agitation related to a recent Crufts winner. In this episode, Sean and I tackle the question of how do we have edifying conversations with brachycephalic dog owners? We cover the current challenges vets face both in the consult room and social media and provide steps you can take to strengthen the bond you have with these clients. Additionally, we talk about the positive knock-on effects you can see as a result of your conversations that will ultimately make steps forward for these breeds that we love so much. It was a joy talking with Sean, and I'm excited to share today's episode with you, so let's jump right in. All right. Well, Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Ryan. It's great to be here.
This is very exciting. I have been watching the conversations that you've been having on social media related to brachycephalics. I feel like there was this big heat wave almost that went through social media. I think it was because of Crufts, quite honestly, and that always unearths or re-earths, I don't know what word I'm trying to use, re-exposes the issues that are going on within the veterinary community or with breeders related to how do we deal with brachycephalics. And you've definitely taken the brunt in some cases by being outspoken about how do we talk about this. But I'm really excited today to take that conversation and look at it through the lens of how do we talk to these clients? Like if we're talking to new grads about how to prepare them for when they walk into that consult room with that Frenchie puppy, I feel like you're going to have a lot of experience and just, again, like the experience that you've had working on social media and also just being in the veterinary profession, I'm excited to kind of dive into this deeper. So before I keep on waffling over here, I'm going to turn it over to you. Kind of take us through in like a 30 second to 1 minute spiel, like what was happening on social media when Crufts was going on?
Yeah, so it's been a bit of a whirlwind week and a half, I suppose. Crufts, for anyone who doesn't know, is basically the greatest dog show on earth, apparently, run by the UK Kennel Club. And every year, it's not just brachycephalic welfare issues that I get annoyed about, to be quite honest, cropping up with dogs that are awarded in the show ring that are extremely overbred and exaggerated with physical features that we know cause serious health problems and predispose them to disease. And, you know, there's a lot of talk going on with the Kennel Club itself and Crufts saying they're improving dog welfare, and with vets, you know, colleagues of ours who work within those circles, trying their best to influence breeding and the show ring. And then judges awarding, yet again, really, really exaggerated and poor examples of breeds, specifically brachycephalics, because I think it's the physical characteristic of those dogs that we do aim for because of this cute factor that causes them disease. It's a little bit more subtle in other dogs that happen to be predisposed to certain diseases. This is something that we physically like the look of and we breed for, and it causes problems. So yeah, as you say, it kind of re-emerges each year, and I'm very often disappointed, and sometimes I'm just banging my head against the wall going, why are we still here with still this exaggerated dog being held up on the altar of all that is brilliant in dog breeding, in front of the globe, you know, on a world stage, and normalizing and glamorizing deformity. And it kicked off this year, and perhaps, you know, in some ways I might be a good person to talk about how to talk to clients about brachycephalics. I think a lot of brachycephalic owners might say the opposite this week, because I did agitate a little bit just a little bit of agitation and stirring the pot maybe. But I think that's important to get some traction on this and to get people really examining, why are we breeding these dogs like this? There was a French bulldog basically that won best of breed, best in utility, and went forward for the final best in show, and he had no muzzle to speak of and no nostrils to speak of. And the fluke, I suppose, was that he did have a good BOAS score. He had a grade zero on his BOAS test, but that we know that that confirmation is not normally achieving such a good BOAS result. Mm-hmm. So I spoke about it. I went to Crufts for the first time in about 6 years. I spoke to his breeder, believe it or not, and I talked then about the dog and how much inbreeding was going on in his pedigree and why are we still celebrating that confirmation. And I received a lot of good media traction and was quoted in various newspapers and things and to talk about that issue, which I think is the objective of why I talk about this on social media and don't hold back. But then I also received, you know, an absolute torrent of abuse from owners and breeders and people who were on the defensive and felt attacked. And I totally understand it, but I would do it all over again.
I applaud you for having the courage and the bravery to do that. It's not easy to deal with that kind of onslaught on the social media sphere. But just the fact that, like, again, like you went to Crufts, you were able to speak to the breeder, you're talking about these issues, you're saying like, hey, this is still a problem. We're not just sweeping it under the rug. I think about it from our new graduates' perspectives, where obviously they're seeing you absolutely just get torn to shreds talking about something like this. And like here in the US, at least, I'm trying to remember, you can remind me in the UK, but at least the Frenchie surpassed the Labrador as being the most popular breed last year, I believe. And so we're definitely seeing a ton more French Bulldogs or Brachycephalics in general in practice. And so for these new grads, I know they're like, even for myself, I remember seeing Frenchies coming in or Bulldogs coming in like these little 3-month-old puppies or 2-month-old puppies having cherry eyes already because of their conformational issues. And as a new grad, I'm kind of wrestling with this moral kind of issue, like ethics of being like, this dog has severe issues. It's probably not going to live very long. How do I convey like the struggles that I'm feeling about, like, I understand what's happening in this dog. How do I convey that to the client so that they're on board? They're aware of what they're about to walk into. Chances are they just spent like probably $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 on some of these dogs, which boggles my mind to even think about that kind of money. How do I bring this client on board? How do I have an edifying conversation with them so that they don't leave here thinking, my vet hates my dog, I'm going to find a new vet? Because to be fair, I think I did have one brachycephalic dog owner that left our practice, not just related to myself, but another doctor in the practice. We were both like, this dog has severe issues. We want to be here to help you, but they didn't want to hear it. And so they left, which I'm like, okay, you're not going to be the vet for everybody. That's still stung. But I think back on it and I'm like, okay, is there anything I could have done differently in my conversations with them to, again, bring them on board, let them know that I am there to help them? And to, again, like prepare them for the lifelong disease issues we're going to deal with in this dog. So in talking about it from that respect, like there's definitely a lot of layers that we can look at with this. And I think that first one is, at least for myself as a new grad, was like dealing with my own emotions when I walked into that room, like knowing that I was dealing with a brachy. I already had my guard up because I've dealt with it enough that I know there are definitely clients that are like, no, this is the healthiest brachy ever. And no, they're supposed to breathe that way. And in a way, as a new grad, you're like, no, I know that's wrong. I know the science behind it. So dealing with my frustration, my sadness for this dog and a little bit of contempt, but also like the clients walking in super excited. They love their pet. They're really dead set on like, this is going to be the best dog ever. So in a way, putting my own emotions in check was that first step. But from your perspective of things that you've seen with clients and just the general public, I guess, would be the front that you've seen. What are some tips that you, I guess, you would have for those new grads when they're preparing to see a brachycephalic? Like, what is the client thinking?
I think there's kind of, as you said, layers to this. I would say that, you know, you may have seen that puppy, that 2-month-old puppy 2 months previously when you had, were called out to do the cesarean section on its mother. You know, so there's a big background conversation that we need to be having as a veterinary community and a veterinary industry. You know, veterinary bodies should be kind of addressing this as well, which is breeding these dogs, you know, and kind of tackling the breeder issue, whether that's kennel club show ring type breeders who say they're all about the health and welfare and improving the breed. The show ring often shows us that's not the case. Or whether it's the backyard breeder who's cottoned on to the fact that these breeds are extremely popular, very marketable, elicit that cute factor that everyone goes, oh my God, look at them. They look so adorable because they fit the baby schema and look like a human infant is actually the subconscious reason we like them. And yeah, I think to get to the individual client bringing in the new puppy, I think one of the fundamental kind of approaches that vets need to take is to be really upfront and honest with each client as they come in the door. And if you're not the right vet for them, then so be it. Because there is a defensiveness, and unfortunately there is a divide, like vets versus us. Vets don't like our breed. I found when I was in clinical practice, the most disarming way and the most engaging way to talk to them was to be right up front from the start and say, I'm going to level with you here. You probably heard and you probably know that vets are concerned about your breed. And I'm going to say, as I always say, I don't dislike any breed. I'm very concerned for what we've done to some breeds. And this is a breed of concern. You know, the breed society will also tell you it's a breed of concern. You've opted for a breed that has some of the most serious and most kind of severe genetic health problems. And I want to have a good relationship with you to help your dog overcome whatever might arise in future. And I want to be here to support you in your journey as a dog owner. I also want to level with you and say that, you know, if you choose to have another dog of this breed in future, I think there's really, really a conversation to be had about choosing responsibly and holding breeders to account on how far they're going with exaggerating some of these dogs' features. So let's have a chat about that if you decide to get another one. And I think you have to befriend people like that, but you have to be honest, because the way I've seen it break down, and you've described one example, is two people are sort of on the defensive from the very start or worried about the interaction that's going to come because you're cherry picking your words. What shall I say without offending them? Or how can I bring up this topic? Because you need to bring up the topic. You're going to have potentially a trouble-free existence with that dog for the duration of its lifespan and comes in for its annual health check and all is rosy and good. Or you're probably going to have some issues related to that breed's genetic health predispositions over the course of its life, or you're going to have a dog that's, sorry to say, you know, an absolute walking disaster, and it's going to come in over and over again for loads of things, and there's where the relationship will really break down for one of two reasons, probably three. One is, this is costing me way too much money, and you're a good scapegoat for me to blame here because you're charging me. You know, I'm getting the bill from you, and I didn't ask for these bills, and it's your fault, Mr. or Mrs. Vet, or it's, you're making up these problems. My dog doesn't have all these problems. He doesn't need, he, she doesn't need all of these tests or diagnostics or surgeries, for example. Or just, you know, you hate the breed. I want to find a more sympathetic bulldog vet, something like that, or pug vet, whatever. So I think it's a tricky thing to navigate. And I think the only way, well, a very beneficial way to navigate it is to be straight up from the very beginning on your position and that you are there to support, and you'd never judge an individual dog for its anatomy or whatever. This is an issue we've got into where we've almost pushed these breeds too far. And unfortunately, vets are having to sort of try and clear up the mess or to help the dogs along. But we need to have a wider discussion about why we're buying these dogs or why we're rewarding breeders for extreme breeding. So there's kind of like two layers to it in terms of like time, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so hard because, of course, by the time they've walked into the room with you, you can't be like, oh, you shouldn't have gotten that dog. You should give it back to the breeder. Like, that's just going to, like, kill the relationship right
then. There's no point.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no point. Yeah. You have to win them over to try and influence their future behavior and influence and also influence. I have to say as well, by the way, I got loads of hate and trolling and, you know, personal comments and stuff. I got absolutely tons of support. You know, the content that I put out on social media last weekend got shared absolutely widely, and I got loads and loads of support. And a few of my friends said to me when I was quite stressed last weekend with the amount of interaction online, you're just advocating for dogs to be able to breathe. let's actually boil it down. We're not saying anything too controversial in just asking for dogs to have nostrils and a muzzle, this basic dog design, and be able to breathe properly. And then, you know, it got thrown back at me. Oh, but he had a BOA score of 0. It's not even about this dog. This dog is the fluke, the exception that got through and got the high grade, and maybe he was awarded for that. But we're dealing with brachycephaly causing all sorts of problems, from eye conditions, spinal problems, brain issues, tail, skin folds, excess skin, dystocia, and you know, cesarean births. We're dealing with a condition that has a multitude of welfare issues. And we're vets that take an oath to advocate for, not only protect and enhance, but advocate for animal welfare. And so that public speaking part, or that social agitator role, I think is something that the veterinary industry maybe doesn't do very well because we're afraid of offending owners.
Mm-hmm. Are you a new or recent veterinary graduate? If so, listen up. My course, Sawyer Vet Now What, has been put together specifically for you. We focus on the non-clinical skills. Don't tune out. This is not as dull as it sounds, I promise you. In fact, almost every career problem that people face are due to not having well-developed non-clinical skills. The skills that I'm talking about are things like client communication, so you have great relationships with clients, emotional intelligence, so you've got great relationships with your teammates, effective negotiation skills, so you can get paid what you are worth, management of imposter syndrome, and how to build formidable resilience. They're not just skills, they are prerequisites vital for success in financial and emotional well-being. This course serves as an essential stepping stone to your success. So let's take the leap together. I will be your mentor as we go through 12 modules helping you transition from being a student to being a fully rounded professional. Head to www.drdavenichol.com/syav-class to learn more. Now back to the show.
But I think we have to be a bit braver in pushing that narrative. And the only way we'll get those owners on side, or potential new owners on side, is to say, look, guys, we're just advocating for these dogs to get better. And we believe that we've pushed them too far. And I think you as a dog lover, get them on side, you as a dog lover would agree we've probably pushed this dial a bit too far in the wrong direction. So, yeah, I think it's about kind of trying to communicate strongly, but not push people away. And it's also about influencing their behavior now, future behavior as the owner of that dog, because if they didn't realize what they were getting into or what the issues with the breed were, and now they do as an owner, and they have a supportive vet who is willing to stand alongside them and educate them and help them kind of make sense of it. I know that sounds patronizing. Then hopefully they will become advocates for bettering the breed and improving the welfare.
Exactly. That point right there is so important. And I'm going to break down kind of everything that you've just said here in the last couple minutes. And so like that first main one that you brought up was just honesty. So like you walked into that consult room. And so like you said, like being honest with these clients is what is so important. You don't want to be waffling back and forth, tiptoeing around things. Like just like a lot of clients really appreciate it when you are just like, you know what? I'm going to be really honest with you right here. I have some concerns about the dog that we have in front of us. Like I know you love him dearly and I'm so happy that I get to be a part of that care team. But we really need to talk about some things. So being really upfront, but also sharing with them, and you mentioned this, is just reminding them that we're on the same team. So often it can feel like it's us versus the client, but the reality is we are on the same team. We want what is best for this puppy, for this family. The goal is not that I see them every 2 months for a skin issue or a slip disc or a cherry eye or this, that, or the other, or allergy flares. My goal is that we can set up a management plan so that we have an expectation of what could be coming down the road, but your dog can have a full, happy, healthy life given the circumstances that it has. And also within that, like at least here in the US, like part of that like preparatory talk comes from when we bring up the idea of, hey, have you thought about getting insurance for your puppy? And a lot of people are like, oh, why would I need insurance? And I'm like, well, unfortunately, this is a dog that is well known for having a lot of medical issues. And usually at that moment is when I get a lot of clients that are like, what? Like they're surprised by the fact, because they've been, in a way, fed this kind of narrative that Frenchies and Bulldogs, they're cute. They're little. They're like little babies. Like, they have great personalities. I'll tell you that. They have some great personalities.
Of course they do. Yeah.
And so, yeah, they can be awesome dogs. Why wouldn't you want one like that? But they don't really get the education that, you know what, by choosing a dog that is like this, you are going to have a huge amount of emotional, financial toll, honestly, by keeping one as a part of your family. So when I broach the subject of insurance, it allows me to open the door of being like, hey, again, I'm on your team. I want to try and save you money, but I also want little fluffykins. Hopefully it's not a fluffy bracky. Oh, that's a whole different thing.
whole other thing. Yeah.
Hopefully little fluffy can be happy and healthy through their life. And by doing that and repeating that over and over and over again of, I'm glad to be a part of their care team. I want to help you. I'm here to provide you with the education of what could happen. Like, you start to build that relationship and that defensive wall starts to come down. It becomes less of an us versus them type of thing. So from that, and I guess like the last big thing that you mentioned was that knock-on effect that happens. Like, yes, it would be amazing if we could fully change the mindset of the breeders that are still breeding unhealthy dogs. There are some, I will say, and I want to applaud them heavily, that are trying to improve the quality of these breeds. But the majority of the time, we're not getting the foothold in the door with them. But we get the foothold in the door with the clients that are buying those dogs. Yeah. And like you said, like, it's that, like, maybe they're like, you know what, I really did have a good experience with my first one. I'm going to get another one. And I'm like, well, since you're now a little bit more aware of some things, like, let's talk about, how do you find a responsible breeder, like an ethical breeder? Like, let's talk about that. I'm here to help you. I want you to make the best choices so that I can be excited with you when you bring that next puppy in. So there's that aspect, but also the knock-on effect of their word of mouth. Because we can sit here as vets and we can be on social media and we can say these things. And yes, we are going to have a huge outreach like you did. Like, you probably changed a bunch of minds, honestly, or at least educated a lot more people about what can happen with brachycephalics. But nothing is quite as strong as that word of mouth that happens from friends to family to
and
colleagues.
And within that community as well.
Right? Exactly.
Within the bulldog community, yeah. Pug community, you know, there's no better advocate than a pug owner, bulldog owner.
Yeah, because as they're walking their little pug down the road and someone's like, oh my gosh, they're so cute. They're like, oh, that's a funny way to breathe. Maybe that client will now say, yeah, she actually had to have airway surgery to try and fix it because this breed, blah, 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 blah. And thus forth, they've then educated someone else. And from that, you're going to have that, like, again, it's a change, it's a knock-on effect, which we don't always think about. We're thinking about in the consult room with that client. But everything that we do and say will have an effect within the community. So that's kind of the little, like, tidbits. Those are big tidbits that I pulled out of everything that you were saying. Because again, like you've seen, like you said, you've seen the onslaught that happens on social media. You've also seen the really positive side of it. So in a way, I'm kind of curious, how would you recommend, or would you recommend new grads or hospitals talking about brachycephalics on their social media? That's another can of worms. Open that up.
Yes. Yeah, because there's no better qualified people to talk about it. We are tasked with their healthcare when things go wrong. And I think as long as you're speaking, and you do need to be careful, and you do need to avoid certain pitfalls that, you know, of like being judgmental or being driving people away. I think you need to be supportive and educational. Right. So it's absolutely fine and justified to have a monthly social media post from a practice talking about a certain breed and certain health problems that are associated with it and being supportive and educational. Here's some information. Maybe not just doing it about brachycephalic breeds lessens the blow or makes people feel less victimized that vets are constantly against our dogs. You know, we should be talking about dog health, and I think we should be speaking up proudly and positively about our role in dog health. And I think, again, you know, you've touched on it. This is a social change issue. This is a behavioral societal issue. Why do we continue to purchase, propagate, glorify total deformity and abnormality in our pet dogs that we care for? And we have this disconnect with how our behavior as breeders and purchasers, consumers of dogs, influences the shape of dogs and what happens to dogs. So it's a huge, big challenge, and it's a long game as well. It's something we're not going to solve overnight. You know, I've been banging this drum for probably 15 years and been involved in various groups, like Dog Breeding Reform Group and the All Parties Group on Animal Welfare in Parliament, and getting involved in lots of different ways behind the scenes, not just being a mouthy one on social media at Crufts every year. But this is a huge societal change and shift that needs to happen. And of course, we need to be part of that dialogue. And we shouldn't shy away from speaking about it in, you know, authoritative kind of way, because we know a lot about it, but in a way that doesn't push people away and says, we want to be part of the solution here. And putting in some softening touches, like, you know, I kind of talk about, we're a nation of dog lovers. How come we're not having this discussion? And every dog lover, 99% of dog lovers are going to go, ah, yeah, he's got a point there.
Like, what are the things, you know, that we can agree on, that we're on the same team, rather than being combative about it?
Yeah, and also just bearing in mind that the crunch point, or the most important point almost, is the one that we don't often get, which is trying to convince potential new puppy owners either not to buy a certain breed if that breed has been pushed too far, or to only buy a puppy of that breed from a breeder who is actively trying to change the breed to a more healthy conformation or shape or less health problems. And that's across the board. And we don't often get to do that, but actually talking about it as an industry, talking about it as a practice or as an individual vet, and being, again, trying to be non-judgmental. Sometimes I do not follow that rule, but trying to be non-judgmental and supportive and educational, and saying, you know, why vets are so concerned about this and what you can do as the audience. Talk to other dog owners about this. Talk to your friends and family. If they're considering buying one of these breeds, here are the pitfalls to watch for. Here's how to recognize a responsible breeder versus a breeder that's doing it for money and not looking out for animal welfare. So I think giving some practical tips and saying why we, you know, we need to talk about it, and not using kind of judgmental language is really important as well.
No, I think that it all circles back to that, is like, how do we talk kindly to one another about these issues? Because again, like, we've seen how absolutely horrendous people can be to each other on social media. We've dealt with it in person, but we can be the catalyst for change in a lot of these situations. And for the new grads that are listening and they're like, man, I'm actually kind of nervous now to talk to a brachycephalic dog owner. Like, don't be. Like, again, you are on the same team. Like, they're coming to you with their new puppy. They're excited. You can be excited with them. You can say, yes, this is, like, congratulations on bringing this new dog in. Let's make a plan together so that this puppy can have a healthy life, so that you can be aware of the issues that could potentially be coming down the road. Like, it doesn't have to be a scary conversation, as much as we talk about some of the negative conversations that have happened. But when in doubt, like, reach out to your colleagues. If you don't know an answer, or you are trying to find a solution, like, reach out to your colleagues, talk about some of the conversations that you've been having. And again, like, take to social media a little bit. It's not bad to talk about some of the challenges. And I think, Sean, you made a really great point about, like, even as your practice, some of your social media schemes can be, maybe you have a month that's related to puppies and puppy care and how do you choose a breeder. It's not that you're specifically singling out brachycephalics, like, that stands for all breeds, or making the posts that are like the common diseases or common issues that are found with this breed. And you do that like once a month. So that way you're just providing more education to your clients, because they are consuming information on social media. Like, that's kind of where they're going. I can't tell you the number of times I've had a client come in being like, so I found this thing on TikTok. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
I know.
I'm like, I'm glad we can talk about it.
This guy on YouTube says.
Exactly. My Dr. Google said. But again, like, it's that word of mouth. It's that ability to develop relationships that is super important. And that's what it all comes down to at the end of the day. And we want you guys to have a happy career as well within this profession. And again, part of that is learning how to communicate, how to build those relationships, because we know at the end of the day, 90% of what we do are people, 10% is animals. So make use of that time.
Yeah, I'd say as well, just on your point about welcoming the puppy and being excited, it's very important to be excited.
Yes.
You're excited about every other puppy that comes through the door. Don't not be excited and be, oh God, I've got to have a serious conversation whenever it's a pug or bulldog. You know what I mean? So very, very important to be on side. The other thing I'd say, just thinking about new grads and thinking about where I was, 14 years ago now when I graduated, it's important to build resilience as well. And I think like last weekend was a good reminder for me of like social media burnout and the negatives of social media. So as a new grad, we're saying, oh, you should be, you know, open to posting on social media, using social media. You don't have to. And I think it's very important to recognize, especially in your early years of clinical life, when you're learning on the job and it's very demanding and it's time consuming and your energy is low, to take yourself out of situations where your social battery or your energy is being zapped. And I think if you get into a big hoo-ha on social media about something to do with animal welfare, whether it's extreme brachycephalics or whether it's another, you know, ethical issue of pet ownership, if it's getting you down or if it's draining you or it's, you know, stressing you or you're feeling, you know, a lot of negative emotion, just log off and just leave it. And now I think some of the criticism came from within the veterinary community of what I was doing last weekend as well, because people were like, you're never going to get people on side by telling them they're doing it wrong. And I spoke to some of the vets that are working within the Crufts arena, and some of doing the health testing and doing the BOAS grading and all this kind of stuff. And they're doing fantastic work, which I applaud and commend them for. But I think there's also a role for another vet to be talking in a different way. And I think actually we don't have to be completely united and, you know, simultaneously just all say the same thing. Actually approaching it from different angles is really important. And that's not everyone's job. And I'm not like, you know, showboating myself, but I kind of described when I got that feedback of like, you're never going to catch, you know, fish with that approach. And, you know, it's the carrot, not the stick. And I've said, actually, this is a social change, a social kind of behavior that we need to try and impact as a veterinary industry, as a profession. And in any social movement for change, you need agitators, innovators, and orchestrators. And I've kind of said, what I was doing last weekend really is pushing the line a little bit on speaking about an individual dog, singling out a breeder who put themselves on a world stage to be judged. So I don't feel too guilty about that in that circumstance, but I would never do it to a client's dog. Mm-hmm. But the social agitation part and actually ruffling a few feathers sometimes is important too. But you do need to have the energy for that and the resource for that. And I'm not working full time in a clinical practice 6 days a week, three nights on call, totally worn out and tired. I've changed my working pattern that I have the energy to do some of those things, but it took a lot out of me last weekend to be constantly on. And I dread to think how many actual social media contacts and tags and comments and things I had. But yeah, I think it's really important for new grads to say to them that you can't change the world. You can't change everything. You can't get irritated and upset and feel that like every animal welfare issue is your responsibility, and if you're not talking about this problem then you're being neglectful or you're not, you know, you're not a good vet. You have to choose your battles, and sometimes you have to walk away from battles that you don't have the time or energy for.
Those are all super important topics that you're bringing up, and I'm glad you talked on it, because like we do talk about the social media sphere and like, yes, it's important to have a presence there, but there is a lot to say about, honestly, like there will be times where like, honestly, like if you talk about anything that has to do with like putting something in a dog's mouth, you're going to get rimrolled for it. So having the ability to kind of step away if something is getting too much will be what helps like protect yourself and your practice as well. But as we're coming out of time here, I do want to say, Sean, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I feel like we've kind of circled back to, it's not necessarily anything new about talking about relationships and how do you develop that client bonding. But this is a topic that can be hard for some new grads. So I appreciate that you kind of brought your experience to the table and that we've been able to kind of hash out some ideas for new grads if they're thinking, okay, like, how do I do this? I think it's very valuable. So thank you so much. And also for people that are like, wait a minute, I didn't know Sean was talking on this. Like, where can they find your social media so that they can kind of see the start of the story and kind of see where you were coming from?
Great. Yeah. Thank you for having me on, first of all. So on Twitter or X now and Instagram, I'm That Vet Sean, S-E-A-N, the good old Irish way. And on Facebook, I am Dr. Sean McCormick, conservationist vet presenter.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you can scroll back and see those two posts that caused so much mischief last weekend.
Mischief, that's a way to put it. But yeah, we'll have all that information.
Social agitation,
yeah,
right?
Social agitation, yeah. A proper one. I really appreciate, again, having you on the show, and all his information will be in the show notes for you guys. But until next time, y'all, see ya.
So that's it for another show. Thank you so much to Dr. Mariah and her guests for today's tips. And if you're interested in learning more about what we do to support early stage vets in their careers, then check out my book, Sorry Vet Now What, or Non-Clinical Skills Training Class of the same name. Until next time, take care.